All right. I'm joined today by John Morrissey, a.k.a. at USL Tactics, to talk about this weekend's big match. The Tampa Bay Rowdies are hosting Sacramento Republic for the first time. Big not just for us, but I kind of think it's the biggest match in USL, at least this weekend, if not this year, considering how the Rowdies have turned themselves around and the streak that Sacramento has been on. In a happy coincidence, John, this is actually, you have worked for both of these clubs and both of these head coaches. So I have dubbed it the USL Tactics Derby. What is there anything that kind of jumps out to you about this match just because of how well you know the coaches involved?
Yeah, I mean, when you think about the managers here, they're two of the better considered figures within the league. Like, every year, if you were trying to handicap who's going to be in the coach of the year race, you'd probably be pretty safe leaning into Neil Collins or Mark Briggs as a guess. I think they're both very considerate in terms of data, very considerate in terms of getting a variety of perspectives on their tactics. They want to understand what the opposition is doing in a really detailed way to tailor their game plans. So I had a great time working under both of them, and I think that they're going to come into this game recognizing the importance. It's second in the East against first in the West. It's a pretty big deal, and I would agree, biggest game of the year so far.
So kind of where I was going to get started off, the Rowdies, as we know, went through a kind of tough start to the season. We're 12 games in. The first seven were kind of a not so great, a mixed bag. But they've gotten off now another perfect run through May. I read last night, I think it was on the USL site, that since Neil Collins has taken over as coach, the Rowdies are undefeated in May, including starting off with one draw and 12 straight wins in Neil's couple seasons as head coach since then. Tampa Bay's moved up to second in the East, currently tied with Pittsburgh for the best goal difference. And a lot of it, you know, maybe a lot of both parts of it, maybe a lot of the struggle to get started and also the turnaround has to do with there's a lot of new names and a lot of new faces on this team this year. And the guys that kind of have stuck out to me a little bit in the beginning, start with the big one, I think, is kind of been the catalyst and the guy we'll probably talk most about is Spalding, but also Charlie Dennis, J.J. Williams, Freddie Kleeman. And I want to talk a little bit about Cal Jennings. So am I right? And I've been in this weird situation. I haven't been able to go to too many home games this year. I think last weekend was my third. I'm going to be there tomorrow. Of course, whether it happens on time or is normal, depending on the weather, looks interesting. But things seemed to change around once Spalding came here on loan and got into the lineup. He was in the lineup for the last loss before this five-game winning streak. But he's played, you know, regularly in this five-game streak as well. And my kind of question is it what he's doing himself personally, or is it what his presence on the field allows others to do? Where's his biggest impact being felt?
Yeah, I would point to the impact that both he and Deion Harris are having on the wings, sort of as a combined effect where both of them are very athletic. You can feasibly play either of them as a fullback if you wanted to. And that ability to attack with a lot of pace, stretch the width of the pitch, and then get back defensively just opens up so much more for this Rowdies team. I think a lot of the problem in those early weeks was missing Lewis Hilton in the midfield. And so instead of improving the midfield, you're getting this better pressure from the wide areas that's just limiting where opponents can pass from. So they're getting less entry into the area that was a problem. And I do think you can still speak to, like, Jordan Doherty and Jan Ekker really finding their chemistry as a thing that matters. But you've seen that up front with the press from Harrison Spalding. I think their ability to track back really allows Antley and Guillen to be much more aggressive closing into those central areas as well. So it's this give and take of you found this dynamic set of players to put on the flanks, and it opens up the game everywhere else in a defensive sense.
At the same time, you know, there's been some other names that have been here since the beginning of the season that have kind of come into their own. And I don't think, like, I know there was some excitement about Charlie Dennis when he was announced, but I don't think he was kind of one of the marquee names of the signings from the summer. But he's stepped up. He's been having a great run, too. What's he been doing differently, or just what has he been doing in these last five games that has helped turn it around for Tampa Bay as well?
Yeah, when he signed for this team, I looked back at what he was doing in Oakland, which was very much playing in this kind of midfield pairing where his job was to pick up the ball pretty deep down the pitch, carry it into the opposing half. But once he gets there, instead of doing what he's doing now, which is firing from range, creating shots on his own for his teammates, his job was much more kind of funnel the ball out wide where somebody else is making that final cross. And I think, I mean, you can put it up to the scouting that the Tampa Bay has in place that they saw, hey, Dennis has the ability to do so much more. He doesn't need to be the setup guy to the setup guy. He can be the real engine of a team in the midfield. And that's what you're seeing week in and week out at this point. He can make those runs that really get it high up into the box, kind of shadowing the striker, but he still has the capability to drop deeper, do the thing creatively. So I've been impressed with kind of that fuller role that he's taken on in Tampa Bay. And again, it's just full credit to the staff for recognizing that there was a player who could offer a little bit more here, and Tampa Bay is benefiting from it.
And I think probably the two biggest offensive signings coming in the offseason were J.J. Williams and Cal Jennings. And neither one of them, I think, got off to the start they wanted to. I think Cal's still probably trying to find his groove. And I've been to a couple trainings and I've watched him perform in training. And I kind of looked at him and thought, this could be a 20-goal guy based on what I've seen him do. And he just hasn't been able to connect it on the field yet. But J.J. Williams has all of a sudden turned it on. What's going right for JJ and maybe what's Cal still have to get used to perhaps and to get on the field regularly?
Yeah. I mean, Cal is a player who I think he would have been a perfect fit in a team where Leo Fernandez was healthy. There was sort of the one-to-one comparison where when he was so good with Las Vegas, he was playing off of Danny Trejo, who is very much a Leo Fernandez type of player who can dribble all over the pitch. He's kind of given the freedom to roam about, and that sets up a Cal Jennings sort of player to be a poacher in the box, to constantly ride the back shoulder of the defense and just find those little rebounds, those little touches to really make a difference. Whereas Williams, I mean, he's got the physical profile of like the platonic model of a striker. He's so good in hold up. He's really a solid aerial threat. And I think based on how Tampa Bay is playing right now, that just makes more sense for the system, whether it's meeting the crosses that you're getting in from Spalding and Harris, whether that's interchanging with Charlie Dennis in the box. Williams is just a little bit more complete in his game, and I think that's making the difference for him right now.
Okay. Last guy I want to talk about, kind of touch on, because he jumped out to me at the last game I went to last weekend against Colorado Springs, and I saw you. I think is this Substack Medium? It's one of those your newsletter.
Yeah, trying out Substack at this point. Yeah,
yeah. I signed up for that the other day, and I saw you had your list of X factors, and you listed him. I think this week as the Rowdy's kind of X factor is our young new central defender Freddie Kleeman, who like. Neil's kind of had this history of bringing in some of these guys and you almost view them as projects, see what's going to happen, let them get some time in training. Maybe they'll be, they might be like an open cup kind of player. They might be if you're playing a B team and you're up by three in the 80th minute or something. I don't think that I really expected him to have this much of an impact this early in the season. And a lot of that comes from just not being really familiar with them, but watching him, last weekend against Colorado Springs, the kid is super talented. What's he doing defensively that's kind of been a key part to this winning streak?
Yeah, I mean, just taking a step back, he's an interesting player. He's someone who really showed out in college. He was pretty highly considered when he came into MLS. And Austin decided, hey, we're going to loan him out to Birmingham. And this happened two straight years, and he went down with a season-ending injury pretty early on in both of those seasons. Just talking with Kaler, who runs Hammering Down, is probably the lead guy for covering the Legion. He saw a lot of Kleeman behind the scenes and in training, and he was convinced that this guy could be one of the best defenders in the USL if he could just stay healthy. Clearly, again, Tampa Bay had that intel. I think he's a perfect pairing next to your Forrest Lasso type. Mm-hmm. Lasso is a tank, obviously. He's going to clear any danger in the box. He's a little bit less mobile, though, and I think everyone recognizes that. And Kleiman, while still having that really great build that you want from a center back, has more of the athleticism where he can step up and sweep a little bit. He's a decent passer as well. I think the perfect center back pairing for any team kind of combines somebody who's a little bit more cerebral in the vein of a Kleiman with that bruising Forrest Lasso type of force. And I mean, the results have paid off in these past couple weeks because Kleiman has just been excellent.
Yeah, it kind of looked like early in the season that it took Forrest a little bit of time to readjust playing to like USL standards as opposed to what he was doing maybe over in Sweden a little bit. And the refs kind of gave him a little welcome back, it seemed like, in the first couple of games. But I've been really impressed with him. I'm excited to see. The other big thing we've seen, and I don't know how much this had an impact because this happened a little bit earlier on, before the winning streak started, but we started out the season with Phil Breno in goal because Connor Sparrow had been injured and we're still working through that from last season. Sparrow's been in the last, you know, probably, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 games, it seems like. Had a little bit of struggles at first, and I'm sure a lot of that is adapting to playing with his new teammates, to actually getting out there and getting in game shape, but has been pretty good in the last couple games. Over this winning streak, I think the Rowdies have given up 1, maybe 2 goals total. What's the big difference that he brings in the net compared to like a Phil Breno?
Yeah, I mean, Sparrow is somebody who, if you look at the numbers, has been probably the most underrated goalie in the USL for 2-3 years at this point. Like, he was kind of dominant in a Miami team that's struggling somewhat without him. So, I mean, just right off the bat, that's the most important thing for a goalie, right, is being able to stop shots. And he does that a little bit better than Breno, if we're being honest. I think what sets Sparrow apart is that he's a decent sweeper. So you can play a little bit of a higher line. You can trust in the fact that, hey, Lasso can get beat for pace on occasion and Sparrow is going to be there to cover behind him. Mm-hmm. Sparrow is also a little bit more of an accurate passer of the ball than Breno is. And when you've got that target man like JJ Williams and you can really play a decent lofted pass into him, that just helps on the margins a little bit. You're able to exert a little bit more control. You're able to build with a little bit more consistency and rely on the passing patterns that are putting the players in the right positions because of that. So I'm not going to say that Sparrow is like night and day 100% superior to Breno, but it's just those little bits of extra quality that he has that are making this team better week in and week out.
Meanwhile, and then so I noticed this in something I was reading before I started talking to you. Again, mentioning that Tampa Bay has the best goal difference in the Eastern Conference, or tied with Pittsburgh for the best goal difference at +6, which I thought is kind of amazing because they've lost 2 games, 3-0 to Charleston. They had a 2-1 in there. Like they've given up some goals, especially early on. The East just doesn't seem to be playing as much defense. Meanwhile, out in the West, Sacramento is just, they're cruising. They're at like, I think a +18. They're about 3 or 4 points ahead of Tampa Bay in the table right now. They've had a 5-0 statement win over Louisville. They had a draw with San Antonio, the defending champions, 4-0 over Colorado Springs, 3-1 over Indy and Oakland, and a 4-1 win over Hartford. I mean, basically they're getting it done offensively and defensively. They are, in terms of points and in terms of just looking at them on paper, clearly the best team in this league. And I'm excited for this game because I've been a fan of the organization going back to when they started and Tampa Bay was still in NASL. I got to go to the Open Cup final last season and spend a lot of time hanging out with the Sacramento fans. Rance and Neil Collins on the way to that game too. That's another story. But they are great overall. Like what should Rowdies fans be looking for, keeping an eye on from Sacramento in this game?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to admire about what Sacramento is doing this season. They base their shape out of a back three, which obviously if you're a Rowdies fan, you're going to be pretty familiar with from years past. If there's one thing that impresses me the most, it's the way that they can commit pretty much 5 or 6 players forward into the final third with consistency, and they never look worse off defensively for it. The wingbacks are so aggressive. I would pay particular attention to Jack Gurr on the right side there. I think he's like 3rd or 4th in the USL in shots created, and that's from someone who plays as a defender half of the time. Luis Felipe in the middle. He was a long-term MLS player, and he's been with Sacramento for a couple seasons now and continues to just be excellent. Rowdies fans will know Russell Cicerone as well at striker. He's someone who was tremendous with Pittsburgh, and he's carried on that form. He's tied for the league lead in goals, I think, right now after a couple in Hartford last week. You could point to any position group, really, and realize this team is pretty much as stacked as anyone else. And you mentioned it with that plus 18 goal difference right now. Like, they're head and shoulders above the rest of the league with the form they're in and the results they're putting up.
So, put you on the spot now. What do you expect we're going to see on Saturday? Do you have a prediction? I saw USL Show tweeted out their predictions for the week, and it seemed a lot of people went with the safe call of a draw. There were, I think, two hosts going for Sacramento, and only one person being a true believer going for Tampa Bay. What do you think is going to happen out there? What do you see on Saturday?
So I'll go ahead and just spoil that I did go with the draw, but there's so much to be interested in tactically here where, I mean, Sacramento, you start with that back three. Typically, they're going to allow one of those defenders to, with the ball at their feet, carry it into the opposing half or try to spark play. How do you use Spalding and Harris to stem that tide? I'm going to be watching the midfield battle. Sacramento kind of switches between a three-man and a two-man central midfield. What's the approach, knowing that you've got someone as talented as Jordan Doherty in the middle to kind of cancel out someone like a Luis Felipe? In terms of the offense for Tampa Bay, this is a team where you're not going to be as easily able to create those wide chances that Spalding has been generating, for instance, just because of the way that they track back in that five-man deep-lying defensive shape. There's just so much at play here. I think these teams probably are as hot as anybody else in the league right now. Like, gun to my head, if it was playoff time, I would pick this as my title game. So I think it's going to be a tight one for sure. If I leaned either way, I would probably lean towards Sacramento, but I get that the travel is hard here, so the draw is probably what I expect.
All right. One thing that I noticed from the last game that may ultimately play an impact into this. Jan Ekra did come off last Saturday with looked like a knock. Haven't received any updates about him, but if he's not able to go, who do you think is next up, or who should be in his place on the field, or how does that affect the way the Rowdies set their lineup?
Is Erivo healthy? I would go him if he's healthy.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, think yeah. Good. I mean, I think he's the closest approximation to what you get from Jan Ekra. I probably trust Ekra a little bit more with the ball at his feet, but Haravo certainly has the defensive sense. And against this team, that's probably the decision you want to make. If you're feeling bold, Ariel Martinez could be an interesting pick just to really kind of bolster the offense. For Sacramento to commit to the center of the pitch, maybe open up the wide areas as a knock-on effect from there. So hopefully you get Ekra and you get these teams kind of fully loaded going at one another, but there's interesting permutations either way.
And then the other thing, and I kind of touched on a little bit earlier, and it's something that's going to affect both teams because they're both going to play in it, but there is potential. We're dealing with some weather off the coast. It's the very beginning of hurricane season. There have been some torrential downpours already, and it's supposed to be going off and on. Is either team going to be more affected by a particularly maybe wet and soggy pitch? Now, also keep in mind, Tampa Bay has replaced the pitch in the offseason and supposedly improved the drainage underneath there so that it hopefully wouldn't be as big of an issue. But do you see one team being more affected by that possibility?
I mean, I think Sacramento is a little bit more dependent on short passing, trying to control the game in that sort of manner. I think if you're Tampa Bay, you've just got more of the personnel where you can kind of get into a lumping it back and forth slugfest. So I think if anything, it probably leans towards the Rowdies, but I have a tough time sussing out how much does home field and pitch size and weather conditions really affect things, but that would have been my gut feeling.
Okay. And last thing, and we'll drop the spoiler warning in here, though, so everybody who hasn't watched it can skip ahead. We have been sharing some thoughts and reactions to the Ted Lasso finale. First off, overall, what'd you think of it?
I mean, I was somebody who was a little bit skeptical of season three, just in terms of what we saw on screen versus off screen, some of the episode lengths were a little bit excessive for the storytelling. But I thought they brought it home nicely. I mean, I like a show that's going to wrap up pretty cleanly, and you got a very lovely resolution for basically every character. I'm a huge fan of where they ended up with Roy Kent, especially taking over the job. I feel like you got a pretty good resolution to the whole Keeley Jamie love triangle as well, in that Keeley finally feels like she got something positive for her at the end of this season, which was good. The conclusion for Ted going home makes sense. You got redemption for Nate. I'm going home a happy camper here.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of weird. You know, the episodes were a lot longer this time around. I was reading an article about the whole season yesterday, where they said, you know, everybody who wants a season four needs to realize they already had it. It's just been in season three because of the length of the episodes. But I always thought it was weird that for the length of the episodes to be what they were, for so much important stuff to happen off screen, was kind of an odd choice. So yeah, I kind of feel the same way. I did feel like, you know, basically nobody ended up with anybody. They teased Ted and Rebecca, and maybe there's still a did they or didn't they in there. I'm hoping, you know, I was glad to see Ted go home to the to his kid. You know, a lot of what I thought was going to happen at the end of the episode before season three started is what happened. So I'm kind of okay with that. I figured Nate was going to make his return, and you know, either he or Roy was going to end up as the head coach. There's no way Nate stays as like the kit man, though.
No, he's
And I told you
right on the
yesterday, like my
sideline,
hot
yeah.
take, the first thing Roy Kent should have done was fire Beard. And I didn't even tell you why, but my reason why is look at both of the West Ham games. Beard's directly involved in some kind of off-field stunt that totally distracts the team in both games. You know, I know he's got a good ability to communicate the tactics and stuff with the team, but you know, Roy at least learned from the first time, and he didn't get involved too much in the second time. You know, Beard might be a liability. Maybe Beard and Nate need to switch places, because I think Beard's got the personality of a kit man, even if he's a really good communicator and seems to know his tactics pretty well. But I thought it was pretty good. The other thing I realized, and this is just going to sound nitpicky, I really didn't like the kid who played Ted Lasso's son. But I mean, it's child actors. You get what you get.
He was a little bit grating to me as well. I mean, there's something
He
about
just didn't
kids that
seem like
age.
Ted Lasso's son.
He was a little bit too much of like a snot-nosed brat for like someone as loving and caring as Ted. I don't know.
Kind of weird. I mean, maybe you just chalk it up to Ted being overseas for 3 years. The other thing someone noticed and pointed out, and well, they said they had noticed something, and I thought it was when I, first of all, I thought it was kind of strange. You only had 1 minute of stoppage when they had to replace a net. That doesn't seem right. But also, how come Ted wasn't at Beard's wedding?
I had seen this theory that if you look at the framing of that like final montage where you get the resolution of everyone, it actually starts out with Ted kind of dozing off on the plane. So the theory was that, okay, Ted is actually just dreaming up these endings.
I've read that.
But I mean, yeah, right? Like Ted and Beard are the best of friends. He's doing this scenic wedding at Stonehenge or whatever. You'd figure that Ted is going to make a trip back over the pond, maybe bring out the family and go support Beard, but I don't know.
Like if anything, Ted should have been performing the ceremony.
See, that's why you should be a screenwriter.
That was my, and then the person I was talking to was like, nah, the cracked out chauffeur was a perfect choice. Okay, maybe he was supposed to be there, but since Danny Rojas brought two guests instead of one, there just wasn't room in the guest list anymore.
That was a
So
great bit at the end there, yeah.
I thought it was pretty good. I hope they do. You know, they because it seems like everybody except Jason Sudeikis are like, yeah, we'll keep going. We'll do some more. I would love to see just like spin it off, call it like, you know, Richmond Till I Die or something, and go back to the same cast. But I still feel like Roy should have ended up with Keeley. No one else ends up with anybody. There's hints that Rebecca and the pilot slash houseboat guy will get together, and that's you know the fulfillment of the psychic's prophecies or something. I feel like Roy and Keeley should end up together. Maybe they will in a spinoff. Who knows?
I would have been a fan of that. I think ultimately the decision to have Keeley kind of be her own strong, independent woman who doesn't need either of those two, and then going on with that arc about the women's team that they seeded at the end there, I like that.
Yeah,
But
that would be great to see.
they did throw, at least they threw Roy the bone of giving him the job rather than Nate. So and he was rocking that blue quarter zip at the end, looking nice and fine. So good for him.
I kind of would like to know, like, when they're editing these and putting these together, how much in advance are these done? Like, because it sure seems like this last episode had a lot of like hat tips to internet theories that have been going on during the season, like Ted and Rebecca, which, I mean, that's been going on before the season, but sure. It kind of looked for a while like maybe they were setting that up. But also this idea of the Keely Roy and Jamie triangle possibly working out. And then they go the opposite direction again. So I'm just curious if that was something that they kind of threw in there once they saw the internet reaction, or if it was just a coincidence as well, too.
Well, they did that delayed release of that last episode, pushed it back a couple hours.
It's
so
true.
Yeah, put on the tinfoil hat. Man. Did you really? Yeah, I just watched the next morning.
Yeah. I had to. I had to watch it. I just had to see it. Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it. I hope there's something. Even if you have like Ted FaceTime in, you know, from being sure. An assistant at Sporting KC or something, and or if they, you know, get another USL team off the ground, I can see Ted in USL. I think Ted have a lot of fun there.
Yeah, it feels kind of freewheeling. He'd enjoy that.
I mean, look, basically, he knows that it's called football. And he kind of understands the offside rule. I think that's a coaching badge for USL right there.
Well, I mean, can you imagine that guy trying to navigate MLS roster rules? Like, come on down to USL.
That's where Beard fits in. Cause I feel like Beard is going to have all that stuff down. He's got his TAM and GAM and DAM and SPAM and all. He knows all of it. And then, you know, after one season, Inter Miami will hire him because they don't know what they're doing and they'll be all set. Maybe to do both roles. Cause he can just replace Phil Neville.
Yeah, he could be the manager, the cap guru, all of it.
All right, John, thanks for coming on and doing this. Hopefully once we get to playoffs or with some other big games come up, I can start doing this again. It was just fun to chat with somebody again about the Rowdies. Tell everybody again where they can find you, and including one spot that I just subscribed to today. Where because you're everywhere. Like, you've got your own stuff. You're doing stuff. I saw you're doing stuff with USL now. You pop up on the website. And where are all the places people can find you?
Yeah, so, I mean, if you're looking for the one-stop shop, I post everything on Twitter at USL Tactics. If you want to support one thing in particular, definitely check out Backheeled. I don't know if anyone saw that I did those power rankings that turned into kind of 5,000 words of breaking down every team last season. That's behind the paywall at Backheeled now. Just to throw in the quick plug, for the month of June, if you do subscribe, and it's only $5 a month, a good portion of that money this month is going to charity to support soccer for people with disabilities. So it's a really great cause. The organization is called Top Soccer. So go support Backheeled, go support independent coverage of American soccer, and feel good about the cause you're supporting in the meantime.
Yeah, especially any Rowdies fans listening to this. Top Soccer is an organization the Rowdies have worked with in previous years. We've had some of their local reps on the pregame show when we were doing that. My former co-host with the podcast, Dan, has done some volunteer stuff with them in the past, too. Definitely worth it. I went and signed up. But because I'm fancy, I did the $8. I want my sticker.
Look at you.
And the newsletters and everything. So go ahead and do that. And if you're thinking about signing up, I think it's a week free for the $5 level, 2 weeks free for the $8. Try it out. See if you think you like it. But it's money for a good cause. And there's lots of good causes that need some money, especially in the month of June. So go ahead and do that. John, thanks again for doing this. And hopefully I'll get a chance to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. See you later.
Peace.